Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Running a school system is complicated. It's comprised of many moving parts, all of which are critical to success. Students, administrators, teachers, and parents are obviously a big part of it, but it's the school board that manages the system. School board members reflect a cross-section of the community. They are dedicated and involved in what is often a thankless effort. We need look no further than to St. Louis City, Normandy, Ferguson, Florissant, Riverview Gardens, and many other districts to see a range of problems they and their boards face. On today's program, we're talking about school boards, what they do and why. Joining the discussion, Dr. Kathleen Sullivan Brown is Chair, Associate Professor of Educational Leadership and Policy Studies at the University of Missouri, St. Louis. Dr. John Wright is a retired public school administrator, former assistant superintendent with the Ferguson-Florissant School District, former interim superintendent with St. Louis City Schools and Normandy School Districts, and a former member of the University City School Board. Dr. Victor Lenz is a member of the Missouri State School Board. He served for 39 years as teacher, administrator, and assistant superintendent in the Lindbergh School District. He's also former president of the Lindbergh School Board. We'll begin, though, with Dale Singer, education reporter at St. Louis Public Radio, who has been heavily involved in recent coverage of two of the districts that I mentioned earlier, Normandy and Ferguson-Florissant, both of which are facing school board elections next week. Dale, welcome. Nice to have you with us.
Nice to be here.
These districts that you're covering certainly have issues. Encapsulate them for me, if you would.
It's been very interesting. The election, of course, is next Tuesday, April the 8th. And in Normandy, where the question is not only who should be on the school board, but the question also may ultimately become whether they need a school board because their district is possibly going to run out of money at the end of the school year. There's a possibility the district would lapse, and that would mean that its students would be assigned to other districts, or Normandy itself would be attached to another district or would be broken up and parts would be attached to other districts. So nobody's really quite sure what's going to be happening in Normandy, but there is a very spirited race for the school board there. There are three incumbents who are seeking new terms. There are four challengers, all of whom have been fairly critical of the school board and the actions it's taken during the transfer situation. And one member of the current school board, who was just elected last year, has taken the rather unusual step of urging voters to vote for anybody but the incumbents, any of the challengers, because he says the incumbents have not been working in the best interest of the district.
Is there a lot of interest amongst the population in the district for this vote?
It's hard to tell. There's always a lot of interest among the people who are very interested, but it's hard to tell on a school board race. I mean, they're usually this time of year, and this is not a high-profile time for people to go to the polls.
Well, whoever is elected, they obviously are going to have to take a back seat to the state, are they not, until this whole transfer thing is figured out?
There are a lot of bills in the legislature in Jefferson City that are being debated, some of which would result in the transfer program changing, some of which would result in a district like Normandy, where some of the schools already are accredited, the whole district becoming accredited because a certain percentage of its buildings are accredited. And in that case, the transfer situation for Normandy would go away. There's also a disagreement between the House and the Senate about how much emergency money Normandy should get just to finish out the school year. So, yeah, a lot of issues going on that the school board candidates, both the incumbents and the challengers, can talk about.
I've heard this referred to, and it has been referred to as such on this program, as a complete mess in Normandy.
Trying to make sense of it, but yeah. I was just at a three-hour meeting last night where members of the school board were there and members of the staff at the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education were there, and a lot of the questions that were being asked by this task force, which was appointed by the state to try to determine what the future of the Normandy School Board and the school district would be, many of their questions didn't have answers because it's going to depend on what the legislature does, and they're going to go until the middle of May.
At Ferguson-Florissant, an entirely different kind of situation. There's a little chaos, I guess, in that district.
Well, Ferguson-Florissant, I don't want to say it was calm, but it was relatively calm, I guess, until last year when the board made a surprise move. I think it surprised a lot of people when they put the superintendent, Art McCoy, on administrative leave because of what they cited as differences in focus and philosophy. I think they frustrated a lot of people because they wouldn't or couldn't get any more specific than that because it was a personnel matter. A lot of people had a lot of speculation as to what might be going on. But in any case, there are three seats on the Ferguson-Florissant School Board that are also up for election. Two members of the board are running for new terms, a third elected not to run. And there are, I think, at least four, maybe five candidates who are seeking those seats, including three of whom are running as a slate. Now, all three members of that slate are African-Americans. Art McCoy is African-American. Ferguson-Florissant has a largely African-American school population, but no members of the current school board are African-American. So while everybody has said, no, this isn't about race, this isn't about race, the race has taken a very front and center issue in the race. And then, of course, Dr. McCoy is gone. Dr. Mm-hmm. McCoy decided to resign last month. I think people were surprised about that. He left right as a hearing was about to begin on charges, unspecified charges, at least not charges that were made public, that were brought against him by the school board.
But as you say, turnout is likely to be light, as it always is at this time of year. And yet these races are really closer to the people than most other races. I mean, these are your neighbors that we're talking about.
It's funny. This is obviously, it's a volunteer job. Anybody who has done it, I haven't, but I certainly have talked to a lot of people who have, will say it takes long hours. And you can get involved in a lot of acrimonious discussion, a lot of name-calling, and there's no salary involved. It's a situation where people want to serve the community in which they live.
This is certainly not new information to our other guests on today's program. We'll be talking about that. Dale Singer, education reporter for St. Louis Public Radio, thanks for being with us. Good luck on this assignment for the next couple of days. This too shall pass, as they say.
Thank you, Dale.
We will see. That's Dale Singer. Okay, now back to my other guests. We have Professor Kathleen Sullivan Brown, John Wright, and Victor Lenz. They all have extensive experience in the world of education. But Kathleen, I'm going to turn to you first, because listening to Dale Singer and knowing what we all know about so many districts in this area, it's a wonder that anybody would want to get involved with a school board. The complexity is really pronounced.
That's true. You have to wonder, with no pay, with long hours, as we just said, lots of controversy, appeals in the grocery store aisles from patrons of your district, you do wonder sometimes why anybody would want the job. Many people do it because they do feel that it's apolitical. It's not supposed to be partisan politics. They feel that they can contribute to their schools, and they feel that the education of our children is one of the most important jobs in our communities, in our society, in our democracy. And so they step up, and some of them actually serve for a very long time and do so quite well. But historically, as you said before, the job of the school board is sort of the lowest, most local form of democratic government, and it's a tradition of our democracy. And I remember when the St. Louis elected school board was sort of put aside for the special administrative board, many people, even though they saw all the problems and turmoil that had been involved, still were very concerned about this move to supplant an elected body of the people. That's a significant step. And to do that, you know, the reasoning being that now in our time, education is so critical that we really need people who can be extremely effective in managing the policies of a district.
I'm going to ask my other two guests, who are former school board members at one place or another, and I'll start with you, John Wright. What motivated you to become involved on the school board?
Well, I had children in school, and probably if I didn't have the children, I probably would have left it alone. But I thought I could make a difference, having been in education. The district was pretty much in turmoil. At the time, we were...
But which district was
we were
the first
talking
one?
About University City.
Okay.
It was a time when integration was taking place. It wasn't a DSEG program, but it was a place where the neighborhood versus center program, all that was going on at the same time. And having served in education, I thought I could bring some clarity and some assistance to it. I think many people run for the board have no idea what they're getting into. And I think when you serve as administrator, you do have some idea. But I've seen people come on boards who don't have a clue of what the law requires, because if you do it wrong, you can end up costing the district quite a bit of money. You can cause quite a bit of chaos. You do more harm than you do good.
Vic Lenza, do you have a clue? Well, I know you. Yes. I know you had a long career in education, and I assume that you did. But that clue, yeah, as to what you were getting into.
Oh, I had a clue, all right. And in fact, in my case, having been an administrator, assistant superintendent for 15 years, I had to back off and be very careful not to act as an administrator. As a board member, I'm one of seven people. As an assistant superintendent, if something needed to be done, I could do it. But as a board member, I had to work with seven people to make a decision.
Is it an apolitical job? And I mean, I assume that it's different in different places at different times, but Kathleen said it's apolitical. Is it?
It is definitely an apolitical job at the local level in particular, because if you're going to be on the board, your first thought had better be for the kids in the school district. That's what you're there for.
John, did you find it an apolitical situation?
I found it, well, it all depends on how you define political.
Exactly, yes.
You know, there well, people, many, I guess, with agendas and, you know, who
you
are.
You do have people get on with agendas. Yeah. You have concerns about school closings, classroom, pupil-teacher ratio, services provided by the school district. And so all those are impacted by people saying, if you don't do this, you won't get my vote. I'll campaign against you. I'll run for the school board to take out certain people. They run for the school board to take the superintendent out, a principal out, a set of teachers out in a program. So it becomes quite political in some cases. And sometimes your legislators get involved.
Well, that puts a whole new dimension on it, does it? Kathleen, that sounds fairly political to me.
Well, to use the term political, I also talk about politics is the art of distributing resources, and that's one of the things, one of the roles of the school board is to help set the budget and to set the policies. Should we have bilingual education? Probably the most controversial policy around the country has been, should we teach evolution or intelligent design? And whole communities have totally gotten in an uproar over that decision. The idea, actually dating back to like the 1920s, when school boards were changed to be more sort of corporate-style boards, the idea was that people would be sort of non-ideological. They would come on the board to serve as a lay person, not as a professional educator, and to give the wisdom, as we believe in a democracy, the wisdom of the citizen. But as education itself has become more complicated, now we have to go to the cognitive researchers, for example, that we have over at Washington University School of Medicine, and we're finding out much, much more about the way people learn and how memory works and all of this. So school boards, the role of a school board member and the things that they have to know about, as with the job of educator, of teacher and administrator, has changed so much in our current environment.
I want to pursue that point, but I have to take a break. You've just heard from Professor Kathleen Sullivan Brown of the University of Missouri, St. Louis. Also with me in studio is Victor Lenz. He's a member of the Missouri State Board and a former Lindbergh District School Board member. And John Wright is also with me in studio, former public school administrator and former school board member in University City. All these folks have many more titles. We don't have time to give them all, but believe me, they're very much a part of the educational picture in our area. Back to continue this conversation, we'd like to get you in on it, too. You can give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. Send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. We'll take a tweet at STL on air. What do you look for in a school board member or a school board candidate? We'd love to hear, so give us a call or send us an email. Back in just a moment to continue, this is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back. We'll be continuing our conversation on school boards and a role they play in our region with Professor Kathleen Sullivan Brown, Victor Lentz, and John Wright in just a moment. But first, here are some of the stories our St. Louis Public Radio newsroom is following today. The Missouri Senate is expected to vote on legislation today that would cut income taxes by an estimated $620 million when fully implemented. The measure would then have to go to the House. Missouri Treasurer Clint Zweifel is recommending steps to protect and bolster military bases and defense spending within the state. Zweifel's suggestions today include creating a Missouri Military Foundation. The proposed private, not-for-profit entity would coordinate efforts to support existing military installations and boost defense spending. Meanwhile, in the Metro East, efforts are already underway to protect Scott Air Force Base. And Illinois Governor Pat Quinn is announcing a new state-subsidized program for first-time homebuyers today. The program will offer mortgages at below market rate and forgivable loans of up to $7,500 for homebuyers whose incomes fall below certain maximum amounts. Join St. Louis Public Radio this afternoon for local and regional news and throughout the day on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Now back to our conversation about school boards. Vic Lentz, let me turn to you and ask you to just explain to folks who don't really fully understand exactly what school boards do, what are they charged with doing? What is their specific role?
The school board, the primary role of the school board is to set the policy for the school district. The school board has one employee, and that is the superintendent. So the school board hires the superintendent. The superintendent then runs the district. And the school board evaluates the superintendent and sets the policy for the district, approves the budget and the finances for the district. They approve the hiring that the superintendent and his staff do, but the superintendent is their only employee.
And the superintendent just has to follow the dictates, John Wright, of the board.
They follow the board's directions. And your communication is the biggest thing.
Yeah.
If you want things changed, you go to the board. You just don't take it upon yourself to change, because you can get major conflicts. And the board has to always remember its role, mm-hmm. not to run the district, mm-hmm. but to provide guidelines from which the administration should operate.
And the administration, during that process, also, if they want to change the mind of the school board, there's a discussion and politics going on right there, too.
And the Missouri is somewhat unusual. Most states have some preparation for school board members. Missouri is very good about giving training for elected school board members. And it's very intense and in-depth, I would say. And board members become certified, in effect. And they really do learn about what the proper role of the board is and what their relationship should be and how to communicate with the public and the media. So I think in that regard, I had one doctoral student who did a study on that, and there were lots of states that did not do that kind of intensive training of school board members.
There's a 16-hour program.
And that's provided by
16 hours?
16 hours.
16 hours provided by the Missouri School Boards Association, and beyond. That's for to become certified. Then you also have an advanced certification and a master's certification that school board members can achieve.
What are some of the, Kathleen, you just wanted to say something. Go ahead.
Well, I was just saying, I think if you look, there's not a lot of research about the connection between effective school governance and either the qualifications of board members. But I think board members who have had that kind of training do have a better grasp on what their job is and how to work collaboratively and effectively with the professional educators.
What role does the Missouri School Board play vis-a-vis individual school boards around the country, Vic?
Well, the Missouri School Board is, in effect, the school board for the state, but we set policy for it at the state level. First of all, the legislature passes the law. Then whatever laws are passed, we have to set the policy within education and communicate that to the school boards
essentially
and school
you're
districts.
You're in a position to tell the school boards what to do in some instances.
Correct. We make the – it's called a rulemaking within the law.
Okay, we have a number of calls, not surprisingly. I want to get to them, and I have some other questions I'll get to as well. But let's bring the audience into the equation, and we'll start with Michael calling from Webster Groves. Michael, thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
Hi, Don. My name is actually Michael Shipley, and I'm on the ballot for the Webster Groves School Board. And one of the things I'd like to do is get, you know, Webster University, in our case over here in our district, more involved, get the professors, more of the students involved with the school district. And that's kind of one of my initiatives is in becoming a board member.
All right, Kathleen, you
want
to
respond? I would love to see more of that. I think that we truly need partnerships between our local universities and colleges and local school districts. We have at UMSL, for example, we have lots of partnerships. We've been working closely with districts, and I would like to see more of that. But the problem is there are lots of problems. We're on a different calendar. We're on a different schedule. And we don't truly – the professors don't want to come in and be – the know-it-all experts. They really want to be collaborative. So there have been over the years a lot of programs called professional development schools where the schools become like the teaching hospital in medical education, where we can have our student teachers and our administrative interns in a district and receive really excellent preparation. And there's a win-win where the young people are bringing in new ideas and the veterans who are there in the schools can help train the next generation. I think that's a great idea.
John, what do you think?
I'm on the board, one of the boards at Webster, and that's been discussed. And there are plans to do more in the community with the school district.
Vic, what about students? What about bringing the student equation into this mix somehow and give students a little more of a voice?
Students in the school or students in the university?
Students in the school.
Students in the school, if you look at the high school level, they can be involved in fact, a lot of school boards have students on the school board as a student representative, and they're elected by the student body to serve as a representative of the student body on the school board. They're non-voting, but they are there, and I think that's an excellent idea.
Otherwise, they'd have to depend on pretty much what the superintendent would tell them about what the young people are thinking. Is that correct?
Or the principal.
Or the principal, or parents, PTA.
Yeah.
There are a number of avenues which you receive information from the students.
There is another proposal floating around, and I think it originated with Kelwin Adams in St. Louis City, about involving nonprofits to run underperforming boards. It's gotten a lot of attention recently. Who would like to raise his or her hand to respond to that idea, Kathleen?
Yeah, I can talk about that. The idea is called contract schools. And the idea that's been surfaced in the research is that educators would be treated like other professionals, such as lawyers or doctors. And they would set up a practice. So if I and a couple of my colleagues feel that we can do a good job with a certain type of student, a certain type of learner, that we would create a medical practice or a legal practice, but it would be an educational practice. And we would have a lot of autonomy. Somewhat, this idea sort of comes out of the charter school sort of stream, but these professionals would say, this is what we're going to do, and typically it is for a particular niche of learners. And we will set our goals, and as long as we reach our goals, we continue to get a contract. We are creatures of the district. We would be overseen by the district, but there wouldn't be as much, some educators would say, meddling in how you go about that. And we know, for example, doctors want to treat their patients the way they want to be treat them. They don't want interference by insurance companies and things like that. Same thing with educators in this idea. They would be responsible for setting the goals and the strategies and the tactics. And as long as they arrive at their established targets, it would work.
John Wright, good idea.
Well, right now, I'm on a committee that set up a contract now with St. Louis Public School to save Sumner High School. And all the members of the committee had to go through school board training. And after we've also finalized a charter application to be initiated in the St. Louis Board of Education, it's going to be up to that committee to raise funds. And boundaries have been set up. We have a memorandum of understanding. And so it hasn't been turned over to us yet by the board. We're the first in the district to set up this type of arrangement. So it's experimental on both parts.
This is Save Vashon, did you say?
Sumner High School.
I beg your pardon, Sumner High. Now, who are you dealing with here?
St. Louis
with
Public Schools.
The elected board or the special board?
Special board.
Oh. Well, I wanted to stay with this for one second. Why not the elected board? I mean, should there be an elected board in the city? I guess it's
But right now you have – who has the authority?
Well, the special
right
board.
Now the special board is the one who has the authority
so
do that.
So why have an elected board at all?
Because eventually if things work out, they reach all their standards, it will be turned over to the elected board. And the electric board – and the appointed board supposed to be meeting periodically. The elected board is supposed to be kept up abreast of what the appointed board is doing. Mm-hmm. But the goal eventually is to turn the district back to the elected board.
So there is a role for the elected board. I mean, it is involved and it does have a role to play. Kathleen?
Well, I think historically we have to look at what has changed. And since the 1960s, when the federal government came in with some poverty programs and they put some money into what had been local education, all of a sudden we have this notion of accountability and evaluation and higher-ups looking at what you're doing, and the role of this local school board has diminished in a lot of ways. We have now what are referred to as unfunded mandates, all of these rules and regulations coming down from the state and from the federal government. The federal government sent money through the states in what was called pass-throughs, and with that came a lot of strings, and so the elected boards to some extent, and we have this romantic notion, and I call it romantic because we honor it in our rhetoric, but in fact, local control has really been under attack. And with all of the supreme, almost importance now of education in our economy and in our global economy, it's almost like the elected school boards are sort of pushed aside because all these rules are coming down from above.
Vic, do you want to comment on that?
Well, I would comment first on the idea of the school that you mentioned is very like a charter school. And I think the important thing in this is that those schools are receiving public money, and any school set up like that now has to take the same tests that your public schools. Initially, when charter schools were put in place, they took public money, but there was no testing and no evaluation of the work that they did. The Commissioner of Education and the State Board put them under the same testing, and the first time that testing was done, only one charter school in the city of St. Louis did better than the public schools themselves. The State Board has since shut down a number of those charter schools, mm-hmm. and I am highly in favor of the kind of things that John is working on with Sumner. As long as they take the same test, and if they can produce, wonderful, we've learned some new things.
Well, this testing issue is yet another one that we can talk about, and perhaps it's time to get into that. But let me go back to the phones before folks get tired of waiting. And I think it's EDOC. I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly. Ed. Okay, Ed, in St. Louis, you're on the air. Go ahead.
This is Ed.
Ed, go ahead.
Really, at the break, Mr. Morris asked a question about what makes a good school board member. And my only comment is they have a kid in the fight. They have a kid who is going to school that they will protect. That's what makes a good school board member. Thank you.
Thank you, Ed, for the call. Anyone? Vic,
yeah.
Go ahead.
I think you need some board members that have kids mm-hmm. in school, but also, I mean, in my case, I didn't have any kids in school. I went to school at that district. I had gotten an education there. I spent 39 years working there, and I felt that I had something to give back to the school, something from my educational experience. And a school board should not be all of one kind. I mean, on a school board, you need, I think, some former educators. You need some people who have been in business. You need some – we like to have an attorney, somebody that understands finance, because all of these things are involved in the running of the school district, and that's what the board is there to make sure it's done right.
And I've often heard school board members say whether they have a child in the district or not, they refer to the students and as my kids.
My kid, that's right. Right.
Yeah. One of the problems, and this is true nationally, is that about 80% of all school board members are white, and they do not necessarily represent, whether they have children or not, they don't necessarily represent the demographic population of their area. And as you somebody mentioned earlier, that was an issue in Ferguson, Florissant, where you had an all-white school board and you had a black superintendent in a majority black district. And people do feel disenfranchised when that occurs. I'd ask anybody in the audience, have you ever been asked to run for school board? Have you ever thought about running for school board? You know, it's a fair, as we mentioned, there's a lot of problems with doing it, so yeah. It's not something people think about doing.
John Wright, your thoughts on this racial component that has come up twice now in our discussion.
I think you need a broad perspective on the board, because sometimes people are not sensitive and they don't understand how they impact all the students in the district. When I was on the U City School Board, we had to make sure every committee was represented, not only racially, but by areas, first ward, second ward, third ward, male, female, and you become attuned in every decision you make. Is it representative? And that has to be part of your psyche as you serve on a board. Am I getting representation from the total community, all the components of the community, as I go about making decisions?
Vic, should that be a statewide mandate?
I don't know about a mandate, because this is a local situation. I mean, I think superintendents and school boards need to work to get that kind of equal representation. Looking back to the late 60s and early 70s, school boards were primarily male. And the first time we had a female elected to the Lindbergh School Board, it was a big deal. Now, five of the seven members of that board are women. So that's changed entirely.
Let me give you another piece of evidence. In the state of Missouri right now, we have 520 school districts. How many of those are run by women? Mm-hmm. How many of those are run by African Americans? How many of those are run by African American women? Now, we have several excellent examples in St. Louis. But part of the issue is that school boards who, you know, again, we talk about people who are very civic-minded, but their experience may be somewhat limited. And so their notion of leadership is a tall white guy. And, you know, we have changed. There are more and more women in leadership roles and more African Americans in leadership roles. And yet they're not represented in the superintendency.
Right.
Go ahead.
It's come a long ways. When I was superintendent of Kenlock, I was the only one in the state. And there are only about 16 in the whole country. Only African American in the whole country. So the state has changed in the metropolitan areas, but not totally in the ring. Throughout the region.
You asked questions before, Kathleen. Do you have the numbers?
I think there are six women, African-American women, superintendents in the state. I think we have about 10 or 12 women locally. Statewide, I think that
right.
is.
Well,
so it's still...
Small fraction.
It's still a very... When you look at the population demographics of the profession of teaching... Mm-hmm. And even in central office, but women, in part because it's the school boards who select them, they're not moving up to the superintendency.
Yeah. I have to take another break, but before I do so, we received an email from Carolyn. I'll not give her last name. She may not want it to be put on the air, but for ideas for what makes a good school board member, someone who is committed to all schools, not just their child's, want to know where they live. So this is if she were voting on a school board member. Want to know where they live so all areas of the district are represented. We've alluded to that. That sounds like it should be a pretty good idea. Need to have knowledge of how schools and districts work and must be willing to be trained to be effective, which apparently is required here in the state of Missouri. We'll come back, take more of your calls, and continue our conversation on school boards and the role that they play. All of my guests in the studio today are education professionals. Professor Kathleen Sullivan Brown is with us. Victor Lenz is a member of the Missouri State School Board. And John Wright, a former public school administrator and former school board member in University City. Back to take your calls. 382-8255 is the number. Give us a call. Come on in. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back as we continue our conversation, as we have done during this break, but we'll continue it now in full view of our listening audience. My guests in studio, Victor Lenz, John Wright, and Professor Kathleen Sullivan Brown of UMSL, all education professionals. We have a number of calls, folks. Let me go right to, unless someone has something, that point they want to pick up on from before the break, let's go to the phones then. And let's start with Lynn calling from Ladue. Lynn, thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
Hi, Don. Thanks for having this issue on your show. As your guests have mentioned, education is an incredibly serious issue that's facing our country, as well as the St. Louis region. And I currently live in the Ladue School District, and one of the concerns that I have about any school district board member is that they really put educational issues ahead of property tax issues. I think a number of candidates that I've seen that are running for the Ladue board might be trying to appeal to the folks that don't have children or who have children that they're sending to private schools, and they talk a lot about fiscal responsibility. And Ladue as a district spends less than Clayton, it spends less than St. Louis Public, and we're still getting very good outcomes, but that doesn't mean that we should shy away from potential slight property tax increases if that's what our kids need that are going to this public district. I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks so much, Lynn, for calling. Who would like to pick up on Lynn's point? Kathleen?
I'm always ready with a comment. I don't shy away. Well, I when you were reading the news earlier, Don, we heard that the Missouri legislature is talking about a $620 million tax cut. And there was a recent study put out by the Missouri Budget Project that says the state of Missouri is woefully underfunding all aspects of education. So, you know, there's a reason that we use property taxes, because education needs a very stable stream of funding. And education, as compared to the sales tax, for example, is a more stable stream of funding. Although, if you look at the mortgage crisis up, and the effect that that's had on our districts in the North County area, even the property tax has not been very stable in that case. But we are desperately in need of funding for K-12 education, for pre-K, and for higher education. We make our college students that we want to become our doctors and surgeons. They, if they want to go to college, they have to pay their own way. The state used to help out, and it's not helping anymore.
John and Vic, aren't the more affluent communities, don't they have a distinct advantage in this whole education process?
It depends on how you look at it. You could say it's an advantage or a disadvantage. The state funding formula funds in some districts 50%. In the case of Kirkwood, Parkway, Lindbergh, those are called affluent areas, and the state formula funds only about 10% or less, 8.5%, 8%, and the rest of it is all local funding. So the formula does not fully fund those districts. When you talk about at the state level, the funding formula, as you mentioned, is woefully underfunded by, I think it's like $300 million right now.
You have to look at local effort is in the formula. Many of poor districts have higher tax rates.
Sure.
So the community has taxed itself. And so with the formula looks at how much does Ladue and all these other wealthier districts, how much does the local people tax themselves to support the schools? And that's taken into consideration. Mm-hmm. But as far as the question on the agendas of certain board members running. Some do run to keep, suppress the tax rate. And you have to look at the whistles they blow and the things they say as a campaign. The best thing is get involved. To look at those who are running for school board, listen to what they say before you vote.
A good school board member has to be aware of the money that's being spent and be very careful with the public dollar. They also have to be looking very carefully at the programs and things that the school district wants to do, and you have to have a balance of that.
And I think, Don, a suggestion for our future program is to talk about the school formula, because I don't, you know, the joke in Missouri is that there are only two people who understand it. And we never let them drive together. The problem with the school formula is that it's those districts that are struggling with economic disadvantage who are the most hurt by this underfunding. Districts like Kirkwood, where I live, we have the capacity. And the property taxes and the support for schools reinforces our property values. So our property values keep going up, which means that we support the district. But it's those districts that do rely heavily on the state who are the most at risk. For how many years? 7 years or more, we've been prorating the formula so that a district like Normandy gets only 60% or 70% or 80% of what it's entitled to because we don't fully fund. You hear this expression, we don't fully fund the formula.
Where does Missouri rank in terms of education? For years and years, it was 48th, 47th in that area.
Well, that's why I think there really needs to be a long discussion about this. It's a very complicated formula. If you look only at state support for K-12 education, what we were just talking about, the state portion that goes to those districts, we're in the middle. If you look at the overall funding for education, we're pretty low. We're very low.
And that's been fairly traditional.
Yes.
On the issue of money, let's go back to the phones and bring in Richard calling from St. Louis. Richard, go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you. My question was exactly on what the UMSL professor, I'm sorry I didn't get your name, but said about the formula. It sounds as though, and Normandy is running out of money and supposedly in a few months or so.
Or less.
And my question is this a surprise, or did 2 or 3 years ago the board really hammer on the superintendent and ask for a very clear, honest forecast of what the budget was? And since the state formula has not changed in 2 or 3 years, I mean, who did not raise the issue of the running out of money? Was it the superintendent, or was it the board, or was it some other source? And I'll take my question off the air.
John Wright, let me throw that your way, if I may, as a former Normandy guy.
What you had since I left, you had the district took in Wellston School District. That was a issue they hadn't planned on. Then you had the unaccreditation of the district. Then you had the load put on them of sending students out. Like someone mentioned Clayton, they have to pay $20,000 student where they were spending $9,000. You can't build that in the budget 4 years ago.
Sure.
And so all of those impacted the district at the same time, and so around the same time. And so it caused great calamity in the district.
It's the transfer issue that is causing Normandy's current fiscal dilemma.
At the beginning of the school year, the Normandy School District had a 19% fund balance in their balances. So they would have had no problem making it through the year at all. But as John mentioned, I think the average is $12,000 a student is what they're spending for the students leaving, for the 1,200 students leaving, and they're spending about $9,000 to educate the kids within their district. You can't do that very long before you wipe out your fund balances.
Let's return to the phones and bring in Ron calling from St. Louis. Go ahead, Ron. You're on the air.
Yeah, I think that elected school boards in urban areas do not work. And I think we need a whole new system of getting school board members in urban areas because elected school boards, anybody can get elected to the school board. They don't have to know anything. They just have to give one more vote than their opponent. And people can be get on the school board because they're mad at their child's teacher or they are aspiring to some higher elected office. And in addition to that, I think that school board members, people who are going to run for the school board, need to have training before they get elected. Because when you go to the first school board meeting and you don't really know what's going on, a lot of people who run for the school board have never been to a school board meeting. So they don't really have a clue about the intricacies and the disparate things that school boards are responsible for. So I think the school board association needs to change the legislation so that people get trained before, because the finances are extremely complicated.
Ron, let me stop you there. Don't mean to interrupt, but time is getting away from us, and we'll get some response to that. I will only say that covering the St. Louis City School Board, as I did for a long time, watching the board members come in with 10 pounds worth of literature and books and accounts and all the rest of it, you wonder how from week to week or month to month they could go through all that material and absorb it all. Who would like to respond to Ron?
Well, today when you go to a school board meeting, you don't bring in stacks. You bring in
your computer sure.
Because it all comes that
I'm
way.
I'm dating myself,
but,
I know.
Most definitely, I like the idea of providing candidates for school board with some instruction, some training. That's an excellent idea. Yeah. But in as far as elected school boards, I think they're vital to the community because they represent the community, and the community needs to be aware and unelect those people, move them out of office if they're not working correctly. And the rest of the board members need to work together to isolate that person if they're not performing the functions as they should be performed.
Right. We have to remember the school board is not to run the district. The superintendent runs the district. Mm-hmm. The school board needs to be well-versed in how you set up policies to get the job done.
And for that, you need training, and you need some education yourself.
Well, also, the Missouri School Boards Association, with their attorneys and their people doing it, provide recommended policies for the school districts, and the school board actually and the district goes through that and make the initial changes that they need to make before approving them. But you have to be almost a law degree to do policies anymore, too.
We have an email here. I can't read it all. It's long, but it's someone who agrees that this is really a thankless job, that they get board members get calls from intoxicated parents at night and angry parents for whatever reason. So how do we attract folks to school boards who just want to manage, upgrade the general education of children, who are also willing to put up with all the misery of being a board member? It seems only fanatics are willing to go to those lengths, and to that type of person, that type of person is rarely helpful. Thoughts about that observation, Kathleen?
Well, let me change the question a little bit. You know, there are people who think that local school boards are an anachronism, that maybe we shouldn't have them anymore. Now, we started off the conversation talking about how this is one of the best traditions of our democracy. But in this case, as education has become so complex, you know, I think the person raises a good question. Is this something that we should continue to do? And, you know, critics of this say it is historically an anachronism, that they don't, you know, necessarily represent the people that they of their community. They are responsible for huge budgets. In some cities, the school budget is the biggest economic factor around. That they are too political, that they are run by factions, that they are people who have personal agendas and all of this. So the question, you know, the caller before, Ron and I, have actually talked about, should we have some training for candidates at UMSL? We have a program for candidates to tell them about fundraising and about how to speak before a group and things like that. Maybe we should have a pre-certification for school board members, and then voters could look and say, okay, if you went and got this pre-training, maybe you're somebody I would want to vote for.
John and Vic, I can give you 15 seconds each to respond.
I would say you need the board, But we have to be careful of the hustlers out there. There are a lot of people who want to hustle. They think the money is a gold mine, a pot of gold for friends. And so we have to make sure that we keep local citizens involved in the process and not turn it all over to corporations.
To me, local control of the school board and the school district is critical, and I would encourage the listeners to be totally aware next Tuesday when they go to the polls who's running, because that's the most important election you can vote in. When you vote for president, it's way off somewhere. When you vote for school board, you're voting for who determines the property values in your district, who determines your taxes, who determines the education of your kids.
It's important. Do a little homework and vote. Vote after doing that homework. All right.
Yes.
Vic, thank you so much for being with us. John, good to see you again. Yes. Kathleen, great to have you with us. You're right. We do have need more conversations on this. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk with Lee Sandlin about his new book examining the history of tornado chasing. It is the season, folks. Archived versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.